You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Episode 13, titled What We Become. Aaron, what have you become this week?
I've become slightly disappointed in this episode of The Walking Dead.
Oh, no.
I was, you know, preparing our This Week at Bald Moo, like we do every week. We do, like, little show notes to tell people what's coming up, and I usually like use the episode synopsis to kind of crib some notes together. When I searched for Walking Dead S10 E13, the very first thing that popped up on the Google results was, this is Denai Guerrera's last episode of The Walking Dead. And it's like all this like send off type of coverage. Like, damn it. I was like, okay, well, my first thought is like, the biggest one is they're not going to kill her, I don't think. Because that's the walk. They have the Walking Dead Rick movies, and what's the through line if everyone Rick's knows is dead? Like, so I didn't think she's gonna die. But then my second thought was like, well, she needs to come from the Naval Depot with her super weapon, and what is going to happen with all that? Like, you know, is she gonna get home and just like leave Judith because reasons? Like, I was like, they're really going to have to do a lot to convince me that she's going to voluntarily leave her children. I don't feel like they did that. They did. They tried. They had Judith talking a mess about, well, you just got it, Mom. You just got it. This is us children's express dream is for you to go out there and get her dad. And also, don't worry about Alpha and the Whispers, because even though the audience doesn't know it yet, that war is totally over.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Crisis resolved, everything's cool. Like, but on the other hand, what is the show going to do? Denai Guerrera has been a hero. She has carried this show through bad seasons. She's been here from almost the beginning. Probably the longest tenure person left, except for Daryl.
Except
for Norman Reedus. And unlike Norman Reedus, she regularly stars in Marvel Cinematic Universe movies that make $1 billion. So it's time for her to leave, and like the writers have to, like, what are you going to do? You know, you can't keep a person on contract that doesn't want to be. So I kind of give him a pass him on a curve on this, but it wasn't very satisfying for a fan of The Walking Dead and a fan of Michonne and a fan of the Grimes family in general. It wasn't very satisfying her exit of on the show. What'd you think?
Carol's the other one who's been here longest.
Right. Of course.
I forgot about her.
The C and the D.
So I think I agree with you. I don't think it was like the most amazing way for Michonne to decide to leave, but I think the episode itself is very good. I really liked the Vision Quest stuff and the remixes of the history that we know of The Walking Dead. All that stuff was really clever and was done really well. So I don't feel too bad about the way she went out here. If this had been kind of a season 8 quality episode, I would have been really disappointed and really sad for that character. But yeah, I liked basically everything they did in this episode. I think having bringing in Kevin Carroll, the guy who's playing Virgil here, who we neglected to talk about last time because I didn't recognize him.
I didn't recognize him in the dark with like the 30 seconds of footage he got.
All the grime over him and everything. Yeah, it's like I didn't recognize him, but he's from The Leftovers. He plays John Murphy, which is a show that we deeply love and he's a great actor. And bringing him in, I think, did a great service for this episode, because it's a lot of really good stuff with him. His emotional reactions to all the stuff we learned about his family. That's really good stuff. And it serves as a, you know, as a, like, this is what you could have been sort of a sounding board for Michonne, which I like, all tied up with a vision quest. So yeah, I mean, I mostly like the episode.
I think you're, I just don't know
what they could have done to, like, if you're tasked with writing a farewell to Michonne and she can't die and she can't, like, ride in and really save the day because then she'd just be back. Like, what do you do? It's a big ask.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's, I don't know what you do, because, like, if Michonne had never got with Rick and had been kind of like a Daryl figure to the community, like that silent guardian kind of protector, this just works. Like, she, you know, like, imagine Daryl is in this, but they're trying to write Norman Reedus out and they're going to set up a Michonne and Carol spinoff. And Daryl just finds out that Rick is against all odds, possibly alive. And, you know, the blow to the group of missing Daryl is outweighed by potentially getting Rick back and his personal feelings. And without any other obvious attachments to the group other than maybe Carol, like, that's an easy decision. And it's a very cool, clean line for him to go out on. But Michonne is just a lot more. It's a lot more complicated with the kids that she's got laying back in the community. Yeah, and the fact that, like, this. It felt like it after the fact rushed the Whisperer War, which, like, I mean, you know, when we talked about, like, Alpha going down and all that stuff, I don't think one possibility we gave serious consideration to is, well, the war is just over now. Like, this is just VW Day. This is Victory Over Whispers Day. Like, it's just a crushing defeat. They're never going to come back from all the. All the herd has dead. Like, I never felt like I got that. So, like, I felt like this episode and what they had to do in it necessarily rushed a bunch of other stuff, which I don't know. Because they'd handled this Whisperer arc beautifully up to this point. And now I feel like it's a little bit anticlimactic if that's it. And if it's not it, then, like, Michonne looks like a fool for abandoning the community and her children. So.
Well, I mean, yeah, what's the possibility that Judith is lying here, or that Judith sort of misunderstands the situation with the Whispers?
But that's kind of lame. Like, it's, oh, well, you put a kid on the mic and she gave the adult. So, like, Michonne didn't want to talk to Gabriel. Michonne didn't want to talk to Aaron, like an adult in the community, to kind of let everyone know without playing phone tag game with an 8-year-old what is actually going on. Like I said, it's necessarily sloppy because they had a limited time of what they could do with Michonne. They had to get her out of here before this end of season. They had to kick off this movie plot. It just sucks because I felt like it was outside interference for what was shaping up to be an overall pretty nice. And, it doesn't make the season shitty retroactively. No. It's a bummer. It's a bummer with this big a departure that we didn't get a little bit. It's kind of like with Rick, honestly, too. Like, that was kind of a bummer, too. Like, you know, he goes out, the trash girl kidnaps him after all he's been through. That's what happens.
Yeah. The bridge stuff is very cool. The trash woman, not cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, I'm also bummed that we're not getting a super weapon. Like, I know that I was unreasonably excited for Eugene to build a bomb out of the Russian satellite parts.
Nuclear bomb. Yeah.
A nuclear bomb, a fat boy, if you will. But, like, I was still like, okay, well, you know, fucking Michonne's going to come back with rocket launchers and shit, and it's going to be cool. And no, I don't think we're going to get any of that. It was all just like, she got fooled. She got fooled by a crazy man on an island, which happens. So that's about all I got to say. It's too bad that this wasn't just a regular episode. This had to also sustain the weight of, you know, Michonne leaving, and that's a hard weight to carry for the show. So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the recap, but first, let's take a quick break.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends, and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, we start off with Michonne flashing back to, or well, we're flashing back to when Michonne still had pets. She's walking through the woods and she sees something interesting. Andrea run by. She's being chased down by walkers, and Michonne, as Andrea is being attacked, does nothing to interfere and walks away. This right here kind of threw me off, because I'm like, it's been a while, but I don't think Andrea died screaming in the woods being attacked by walkers.
I think she would have, but like the idea is Michonne saved her, right? It's like
right, this alternate history thing sort of threw me off. I'm like, okay, well, this is a flashback. They're setting up like some poignant emotional thing, but this doesn't feel right. And it turns out it doesn't feel right, because this never happened.
Yeah. And it showcases Andrea doing what Andrea does best, screaming and ugly crying. So that was a nice little character reminder of her. I none of this is new footage. There's no fucking way.
No.
So that they made some clever reuses. I recognize some of the stuff that they got from, like, you know, Norman Reedus shot a little bit of new footage, I think. But like all the stuff from Andrew Lincoln and was old stuff. What they cleverly dressed it up. But yeah, I at this point, I'm like, oh, this is interesting. This is going to explore, you know, what if Michonne had never fallen in with a good community? Because she was kind of in a Morgan place where she was just kind of like mindlessly surviving, clearing, etc. And she could have gone real easily down a darker path. So exploring that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And they do eventually get to that. But we come back to present day and we pick back up with Michonne arriving with Virgil at this Navy Island. He takes her to the settlement where they have herbs, solar power, a playground, a bunch of other stuff, but they don't have very many people, which is a little strange. Virgil's taking his sweet time bringing her inside, and Michonne's getting very impatient. When she finally demands to see his family, she finds out, oh, they've been dead all along, except they're not dead, not completely dead. They're just mostly dead, and he wants Michonne to make them all the way dead because he can't do it.
He's got the family plots, three holes ready to dig. He's got the daily rituals planned out. He just one problem. They're still active zombies.
Yeah. And this whole time I'm trying to piece together, okay, what's happening on this island? You know, you got all these remnants of there was once a group of people here, but now everything looks shut down and neglected. You've got this research facility map that they walk by and they give a close up on. You could see all the groups being in different buildings or areas of the research facility. I'm thinking, okay, there's a bunch of groups here. And I'm just trying to like figure out what happened on this island. And they kind of give you insight into that later, but not all the way.
Right. Yeah. Like it was like there's a lot of lies told by Kevin Carroll here, but the fact that this was a U.S. Navy Naval Research Center kind of gives us hope that like, oh, there is something here. There was a big effort here at one time. What happened? That stuff was, like you said, kind of interesting. But also, I felt my frustration mounting with Michonne's, because she's like, you know, where's the munition dumps? And he's like, oh, we'll get to it. I just gotta, you know, my wife won't be very happy if I come up empty handed. Like I was getting like frustrated with his, you know, because I'm like, come on, time's a wasting. We gotta get these weapons and we gotta get Michonne off the show. And there's only 50 minutes to do it. Chop, chop. So.
Right. You know, the other thing we didn't talk about with Kevin Carroll being in this show and being in Leftovers playing John Murphy, his dad in that show was actually named Virgil, and he's named Virgil in this.
Yes.
And I don't know like if this is just, you know, happy coincidence or if the Walking Dead writers are also fans of the Leftovers.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to know if this plot was in the comics. Probably not. This plot felt expressly created to get Michonne off the show. Yeah. Because the only way I'd buy this isn't a reference to his character was if it like it happened to be in the comic books that he was Virgil.
Right. Right.
And then it's just a nice little detail. But like, yeah, it has to be a nod for probably his most famous television work. I mean, I know he's done other stuff, but yeah, exactly. The Bald Moo fans.
Yeah,
for sure.
So then we move on to Michonne going into a building and starting to clear with Virgil in tow. These idiots, they trap themselves in with a bunch of walkers and accidentally get their attention, and Michonne has to kill about 50 of them. And eventually they find their way to a room where Virgil's family is hanging from the ceiling and they are all walkers. And then Virgil has a moment with him and Michonne kills them.
Yeah.
I got a little frustrated in this scene because Michonne has a perfect, beautiful, like any Counter-Strike player would be envious of the choke point that she finds in this building. Mm-hmm. And then they walk right through it. They don't use it, man. What? Come on. You could take these walkers one at a time.
She throws Kevin a gurney and says, essentially, make a door while I take care of business here. But yeah, there's no way. Like with that long Japanese sword. No way. No way those walkers get past. Have to come fit single file. Just poke, 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 and they're done.
Yeah. But she doesn't do that.
What do you think? I felt like this is a pretty good nickname for the dead. Because we've heard, you know, walkers. We've heard biters. We've heard rotters. We've heard, I don't know, groaners. Rippers. I don't think we've heard rippers before. Rippers pretty good. They do rip and tear.
They do. I like Zombies that. I've always liked proud. That about this show. Whenever they come up with a new name for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Got a lot of local flavor. It is kind of wild that like all these communities within like 100 square miles have all come up with different names for them. But, you know, what are you going to do? I also like for the first time in a long time, I thought because like when she kills these 50 zombies and they're in like close proximity. I mean, this room is maybe 10 by 15.
Yeah.
The smell that has to be in this room full of decapitated, rotting corpses is like, no, yeah, like I guess they just got used to it because like you think people would be like, God damn, this stinks a lot more often on the show.
Yeah.
But a lot harder for zombies to sneak up on people indoors, too. Like you would smell them coming from three rooms away.
Wait,
before we move on, did you notice the Stop the Spread poster in the background of like, yeah, it's like it's some kind of like old government propaganda thing.
Oh, yeah. It was like gonorrhea and some but other like the, VD. Yeah,
I think the way the weathering of the soldier was done, he kind of looked like a zombie. I thought that was pretty sly. And also, I also wondered if it was like something that this is something they filmed like right before shutdown. And they kind of hastily put a Stop the Spread. I don't know. I was putting all kinds of fan fiction into it, but like I thought it was a nice little background detail.
I mean, some of this stuff we're rubbing up against like, oh, this was probably in post-production right around the time that all the coronavirus stuff went down, because like episode 16 got delayed for six months.
A long time.
Yeah. Before they released that thing. So yeah, could be. All right, Virgil and Michonne are burying the bodies of his family, and Michonne is continuing to get more and more impatient. He makes a whole bunch of excuses why she can't leave. Oh, the boat, you know, the causeway is closing. This felt like the third day, right, where they're gaslighting Jude Law, telling him, oh, you can't leave because the beers need to be drunk. Who's going to drink the beers, Jude?
Right, right. The beers are here. The tide is out. You're out of luck.
Right. And so she is listening to this, and he asks if they can wait until morning to get the weapons, and she says, okay, fine.
It's still, it just didn't make sense, because like, I don't, like, she's on a ticking clock. At any given day, the Whisperer could show up in full strength, and her community could be a threat. Like, I couldn't believe the leash that she let this guy have on this episode.
Yeah, it's my only real complaint with the episode is she doesn't act swiftly enough here.
And he's got this like thing where I'm not sure his plot even hangs together, because he had this thing where it's like I don't know, like, oh, I wanted to send my family off with something special, and my daughter had this book and I had to go back to the mainland to get it. Like, it's so weird that this guy would do all this prep work when he didn't have the skills necessary to kill the zombies. And then when we find out that there's other survivors here, like pinned up in this stuff too, it's like, I don't know, like the internal logic of like, cause there's this like one scene towards the end of the episode is like, maybe it wasn't a coincidence meme. And it's like I don't think it is, Kevin. I think the writers, you know, assembled you as a weird character that doesn't feel real, that had artificial motivations to, you know, come out, and like, you're just written to take Michonne away from the show, man.
Yeah.
And that them's the breaks in this episode.
That's a good point. I hadn't really considered why he'd be out there, but I mean, it does sort of check out, right? There's a scene where they're panning over like the playground and the seating area, and there are books everywhere. He's talking about his daughter loves to read.
And he couldn't find, okay, like, well, none of those were her favorite books. The books on the island that she probably read every day. Really? You had to go to the mainland to get a book, huh?
I guess so.
Okay. Okay. Your wife got your wife gets the flowers, the weeds. Your other daughter doesn't even get mentioned. Her son. Like, I don't even know what I don't even know anything about them. But yeah, this one fucking brat gets a book. Okay. Sure. Mm-hmm. All right. All right, Kevin.
He's going to get around to the others. Yeah. All right. That night, Michonne is roaming the grounds looking for supplies, weapons, all that stuff. In Group 2's building, which is the lab annex, she hears someone talking through the walls, and it distracts her long enough for Virgil to find her and lock her into a room. She tries in vain to get out and then falls asleep, gets knocked out by gas. I don't know what happens here, but she wakes up to some people talking through the wall at her, and they tell her, hey, we used to work here. So Virgil lost his mind and accidentally killing his family. And then Michonne eats foolishly eats an apple. Like I saw this coming a mile away. She should have seen it coming.
Haven't you seen like Sleeping Beauty and or Cinderella and or any of the Wicked Witch poisoning princesses? You can't do it, Michonne. Yeah.
I mean, for God's sake, you're in a test lab. You've seen all the cages with rats that are desiccated, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, is like this episode had all this stuff on the margins that seemed much more interesting than what was actually happening. Like, oh man, yeah. We had this like last bastion of testing happening to where the animals all died in their cages, and here's some surviving researchers, and like even the story they told is like, well, how did this happen? Well, you know, this happened, and then, you know, groups kind of came and groups kind of went, and everything was kind of fine except for one night. You know, things went bad, and Virgil locked a bunch of Virgil locked a bunch of doors, and Bob's your uncle. His family was stuck inside, and his family's response, like, they weren't being torn apart by zombies. They weren't being they didn't die from starvation. They're like, well, it sucks being stuck in this room, and I can't think of any way that we could possibly be saved. So let's just hang ourselves. Like, what?
Yeah.
How'd that go? Right. Mom's like, okay, eeny, meeny, miny. We're gonna pluck flowers from a flower. We're gonna pluck petals from a flower until we decide which of you kids are gonna hang first. And then, oh boy, yeah, you're next, Johnny. Get your head in the noose, and once you guys are dead, then Mom will take. What the fuck? This doesn't make any sense. No,
she held the flowers. She said, "Look at the petals," and. Bob's your uncle.
It's not like a fast. Said. It's not like, oh, you can't go like bang, bang, bang to yourself. Like hang it. Like that's yeah. You know, like for little kids, that's kind of rough. Kind of rough way to go. I don't know that the show thought everything through, but well, you know, Michonne's got to get out
for sure.
Like the private plane was gassed up and running in the Georgia International Airport. She's ready to go. Like ready to go. She's Black Panther 2 starts shooting tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What? Let's just get. Like, come on. They hung themselves. Fine. No one's going to question this. Let's go.
So then she, you know, eats this apple and then she passes out predictably. And then she wakes up to find Virgil talking at her through the door about the island's gifts. And she begins a vision quest. Is all I can really call it.
So the Bloodworth Island, I think, is the name of this outpost. It's got like some kind of weird Batman Begins blue flower that causes intense hallucinations. The island has a gift. Is the gift a 100-gallon tank of LSD? Like, what is
right?
Well, yeah. What is the gift of this island? Can we do that too? Can we just like get the Whisperers high so that they rethink their life? And
that's what I assumed. I assumed she was going on some military sanctioned LSD trip. I like the effects. Like, she's got her hands on the ground and there's like these sort of rainbow colored
hallucination effects are pretty cool. And like I said, that would be an ultimate weapon. I do think if you just, you know, like you gave a hit or three to all the Whisperers, they wouldn't want to walk with the dead no more.
Probably not.
I think that they'd just be cured. They'd wake. They'd come out 6 to 8 hours later and be like, you know what? Let's eat some of this soft bread and have some of this strawberry jam.
I mean, I have to imagine,
sucks.
Tripping as a Whisper would basically be like full on Scarecrow from Batman type shit.
Oh, yeah,
right?
You're right.
Like, it you're seeing all these faces with horrifying skin peeling off and coming at you. Yeah. Traumatized straight, you know, scared straight, like the show.
Yeah. But also, these other people, they also look surprisingly well fed and clean.
Uh huh.
Like, they're all wearing clean clothes and they're. You know, like their hair and makeup was kind of like disarray, but like these don't feel like people that this guy locks up and neglects, which was a plot point they establish. Like, he tries to see them as little as he just like gives them trays of apples and they're in tip top shape from that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Where's he getting all these apples? That's what I want to know. Is he growing?
Sure. No, there's a whole like a group six was just nothing but Red Delicious apple orchard.
Hmm. All right.
They're researching the poisonous apple seeds and how they could be used against zombies. And they just need a grove after grove of Red Delicious.
So during her vision quest, Michonne sees Sadiq, who blames her for the death of her family. And then another Michonne comes up and offers herself the chains to her pets. And she is taken back to when Andrea was being attacked. Again, she walks away. After Andrea's eaten, she, I think, is stripping her body for supplies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we see her walking along the road where Daryl, you know, hears her calling and then leaves her. And this is, if you remember way back when,
Orange backpack guy and got brutally left. Like that was the one of the early turning points of like Rick's crew being like hard as a motherfucker, is that they just like passed this guy and didn't even think, didn't even talk about the implications of leaving a person in need in this world.
Yeah. And she is the orange backpack guy in the scene.
Mm.
And so, you know, Daryl having left her, Negan finds her and he likes her so much that he makes her part of his group. Glenn and Heath come in. This is the return of Heath. The loss of Michelle, but the return of Heath.
Oh, we're going to find out about the card. He's going to hand her the card and it's going to be the salvation. Yeah, it's going to unlock the weapons cache. Surely, Heath, you remember that, right?
No, he didn't remember.
Still waiting.
So
still
Glenn
waiting
and Heath,
on the triple P access card.
They come to a savior outpost where Michonne is, now part of Negan's group, and want to kill her, but she kills them instead, which obviously is a remix. Then she bashes in her own brains with Lucille around the RV back in that scene. And I guess she starts the war where then she is killed by Daryl and Rick in a joint operation.
Yeah, apparently that shot of Rick shooting her, finishing her off, was from the episode where he kills Sophia.
Okay.
They dressed up a couple of those shots from different angles and stuff, which I thought this stuff was the best part of the episode. This, like, you know, butterfly flap wing.
Absolutely.
Of like, what if she decided to ignore Andrea and how that changed? I like going like relitigating the war of the satellite uplink center. That stuff was really cool. Her going around and eeny, meeny, miny, moe in the group and beating her own brains out. All that stuff was cool. Even the like Negan offering her an apple, which was like kind of like an element of a reality that her drug addled brain is remixing. I thought all that stuff was really cool and clearly the best material of the episode. The Sadiq stuff, especially brutal when he's like, you know, you let me down. You did this. No, you couldn't even protect your own family. You're my family. This is what it feels like to be your family. And all the blood, like that stuff is really visceral. It really worked.
Yeah, I thought so, too. It was definitely the best part and kind of sold me on the whole episode.
And it's even though nice
there are shaky parts.
Nice to see some of her old friends too. Abraham,
yes.
You know.
I mean Maggie. She's been gone for a season,
yeah.
So two seasons.
Hopefully we'll see her in an episode or two. But like, yeah, seeing Maggie and Glenn, all those people, was really cool.
For sure. Abraham. So let's take a quick break and we'll get right back to the podcast.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, next up is Michonne coming to and stabbing Virgil, which with what I think is a spork. I don't know.
I think, a cafeteria fork, something.
Yeah. She lets the others out of their cell and then goes after him because he ran off. And it turns out he's burned the boat, which they think is their only way off the island.
Their adorable little sailboat. It looks like a scaled up bathtub sailboat. It's adorable.
Oh, yeah.
I was sad to see it. I was sad to see it burn. You don't see ones with those dimensions very often. Like,
sure.
What a weird little toy sailboat.
So they find Virgil in the woods and he apologizes and the others want to kill him. But Michonne decides she's going to spare him and convinces the others to show mercy as well. So they can gain peace is what she says. Yeah.
I mean, it's
trade his life for your soul.
Like the whole mercy overcomes my wrath business with like, you know, this guy owes you more than he can possibly give. If you take his life, it's going to cost you more than it costs him. Like it's all standard, like, you know, what you get back if you give him mercy is peace. It all tracks. But I also think they like listen to her and nod and then just beat the piss out of Kevin.
Yeah,
they just beat him to death because, of course, they would, you know, but I don't know. Our group forgave Negan kind of sort of. But that was like, I don't know.
That's like over years.
Yeah. And also you had the like strongest leaders of the group going along, you know, like I don't think that was a majority opinion that we should let Negan live. It's more of like Nick or Rick declared it as law, and then everybody else kind of like got on board with it, and what are you going to do? But yeah, anyway, like I felt like it kind of sort of worked, but like I don't know these guys enough and their situation and them just forgive. I don't know. And then none of these characters felt real, so like they were just performing the thing they needed to do, which is make Kevin think, can't believe they're forgiving me even though I don't deserve it, you know?
The other thing is they could have done the rest of the episode without him. If you want to just have him beaten to death here, they could have done that. You know, like the other survivors know, okay, there's this other boat. We can go to it. She finds the stuff from Rick and she does all the same stuff. Yeah.
I mean, it would have, I'd almost preferred it if he had just ran off and like, as they're sailing away, he does what he does, which is stumbles to the coast to kind of like watch them leave.
Hmm.
That would have been, I think, more effective. It'd have been more, kind of more melancholy, a little bit more trafficking in the gray areas of morality that the show tries to traffic, you know. But this, it's like weird because like well, these three people we don't know or care about forgive this guy who we don't really know or care about. And ultimately, he doesn't care to accept their forgiveness and, you know, try to start things off because he made a promise to his dead wife to give her flowers every day. And that's what he's going to do.
Yeah. I do like what it says about Michonne, though, right? Because she's relived all these experiences through another sort of perspective, right? So her letting him go makes sense. She's now essentially like confirming that she made the right choices all along. And that she did the best she could, and that, yes, people died along the way, but she wouldn't have been able to protect everyone. And as long as she is trying to protect her family and has their interests at heart, she's doing okay, right? That's what I took away from it, is that mercy can, you know, and that peace that comes with having the mercy can sort of overcome any sort of unsettling feelings you have about the people who have died along the way.
Do you think, cause I that's what I was thinking about. Like, I felt like they could have done a better job of drawing a line between Virgil and his companions. Like, if they thought a little bit more about the situation, they could have had it something that reinforces Michonne's need to find Rick over perhaps her family and the group's best interest. Like they could add a parallel situation, but like none of this, like you're right. It does reinforce the one thing that Michonne is a different person. She is no longer like a mindless killing machine. She's no longer this heavily traumatized person that hasn't figured out how to move on and continue to love people and things like that. Like it's a nice coda for her, but I felt like what they needed is a springboard her. You know, there's like this situation had to say something about the situation she was in and the situation she's finding herself into, which is being catapulted into this movie, and it didn't. It did the bare minimum, which is let Michonne off the hook for abandoning her children, because her children are like way on board for it, and there was no longer a threat to the community. But like, damn. And I don't know, like, I don't know when they found out this was going to be her last episode, whether, you know, I really don't. But like, it felt not of a piece of the rest of the almost 2 years that they've been doing on the show.
With you. So they throw Virgil into a cell. Michonne can't find the weapons, and Virgil says, oh, well, you know, I didn't lie to you because I know the spots they're in, but I hadn't actually seen them. Then she asks what he saw when he trips, and he talks about his family. And then, I don't know, Michonne tows Virgil around the facility looking for supplies and weapons, and she finds some cowboy boots and demands to know where he got them.
Yeah, cowboy boots and a cell phone that has Rick's name on it, and it's carved with Michonne and Judith's likeness and some, I think, Japanese kanji. Did you look into this?
I did not. As you know, it's hard to do research without getting spoilers on this, so I haven't done much. It surprised me, coming from Rick, that there would be anything other than English on this thing. I'm assuming like he saw those characters on the side of Michonne's sword or something and just memorized what they look like. Doesn't know what they mean.
So I did a little bit of digging into it, because we only have like three episodes before we're caught up to continuity. And like, this source was the thing that spoiled me. So I'm like, well, OK, for a penny and for a pound. And it was from the, you know, it was contemporaneous of when this episode came out, which is another thing that, like, if I can find stuff like that, like, the week show threads on Reddits are usually pretty safe too, if you want to read those.
Getting spoiled.
So I did, and like, Angela Kang gave an interview about like this stuff and like some of the implications, and basically the Japanese message translates to believe a little longer. And Scott Gimple clarified that he thinks that
please tell me what Scott Gimple thinks about this, please. I'm dying to know.
Romulan subcommander Jadis, that she carved this into the cell phone as like a keepsake for Rick to have so he doesn't give up hope for his family and whatnot.
Why would she carve anything for a bee? Why is she gonna waste valuable carving time on a bee?
I don't know. And I like, then the only evidence of that is like, she was partial to art and doing caricature portraits.
Sure. She was more of a sculptor.
I didn't know she could read and write Japanese. That's for sure. That was
The Japanese was very confusing to me, because no one I know on this show is, with maybe the exception of Yumiko, is associated with Japanese at all.
Although Michonne, I thought they maybe like Michonne is teaching Judith that for code purposes, because they use the, you know, Daito, Sato, like long sword, short sword metaphors for themselves. But right. Yeah, I don't know. But to me, it was just like, and everything from this, like from this point, the episode just got more and more incredible in like not a good way.
Oh, boy.
Because then Virgil starts talking about a mess about like, oh, this was our meeting wasn't happenstance. It was meant to be. Maybe you were supposed to. And I'm like, what? I don't know, man. It just felt it felt a little weird to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's
and also that like they got this patrol boat that's a diesel boat, and like if both of the virus researchers will help him, then maybe he can get it running. Like, how the fuck did these guys know how to fix a fucking boat of this size and complexity? Like, it's, you know, like there's this like suddenly this thing's running, and like, did they have a shit ton of diesel fuel? Like, did they is this like running off vegetable oil? Like, what I don't know. Oil. Just a whole bunch of
those apple trees. They just pluck them and then squeeze them right into the engine.
Yeah, it runs on high octane alcoholic cider.
Yeah.
I don't like know. Fantastic, man. Mr. Fox. It's that the 180 proof apple cider that one guy's got.
Every time I see an engine of any kind on this, I'm thinking, okay, how is that working? How is it being fueled? Like all that stuff. But
I mean, diesel is kind of like, because like diesel fuel stays stable, I think, a lot longer than gas, and it's not nearly as volatile, and you can make it out of anything, animal fat, vegetable fat. Like there's, you know, if you watch the first episode of Mosquito Coast, you know, you can run just straight diesel. You can just, you know, that shit will just burn. So it's like a little bit easier to understand, but like the fact that they established it not being a working boat. Mm-hmm. But if they had it be a working boat, then why did Virgil go? You know, it's like there's like all this like, just a fucking house of cards storytelling that they had to do this one thing, get Michonne off the show, that doesn't really connect with anything else. And it was frustrating because like, I just felt like all the wheels fell off in these last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I could see your point. So then, Michonne takes Virgil out to the boat. We kind of already talked about this scene, but claims that these boots washed up, and then she finds that phone you're talking about with the carving on it. She accuses Virgil of knowing that Rick was here, and then she freaks out and demands to know what happened. He still claims not to know what she's talking about, so she backs off, and he suggests, hey, maybe we can get this boat running. Maybe she can find Rick again. There was this New Jersey Bridgers shipyard. I don't know if you know anything about that.
Mm-mm.
That she kind of sees on this map, I guess. But then she
did that feel.
Did
that feel satisfying to you? His story that these boots just washed up here with the cell phone tucked into them. Apparently, like to me, this like. No. He should have known something about like, that one group that caused trouble, you know, used to hold this as a holding facility to people. And like your husband must have kind of like this whole like, oh, I don't know, just kind of washed up here. Like, what the fuck? What was the point? Like, this is the lamest. Like, if they truly just washed up, how is that proof that Rick is not dead?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he died. His boots got blown off in explosion. They washed out to the sea. They washed up on this island.
Right.
You know, they washed up to get like it just none of that shit held together. And he's been there the whole time. Right. And they're the hostile group that kind of took over and fucked things. I felt like the threads were there. They just didn't want to connect them at all.
Yeah. I mean, the other question here is what's she going to do if she thinks he's lying? She's already said, hey, my mercy has overcome my wrath. Is she going to now say, well, maybe my wrath is making a comeback?
Well, he keeps on starting shit. Like now he's telling obvious lies. Like the mercy for the current shit has overcame my wrath. But like he keeps working my last nerve.
I get it. So at some point she's going to break mercy. And she'll cut him down you know, put the screws to him and get the info out of him.
It's like if you're playing Michonne in a video game, she's got health and she's got armor and she's also got mercy. And that bar is like 10%. And he just
I would love to see a Michonne game like that.
just this whole like, I don't know, your husband Boots is kind of fucking washed up here, both of them at the same time with the car, and you just see go to zero, and it's like it triggers her ultimate, and she just like fucking splits him in half or something.
And it's a quick time event where you slice him eight ways up his ass. Yeah, yes. I love it.
Yeah, it's a whole full God of War thing. Yeah.
Oh yeah, fling him into the air, jump up there with him.
Her Spartan mercy is triggered and just goes crazy.
Hell yeah, that'd be a fun game. All right, so Michonne packs up Rick's stuff and then tells Virgil that the others are willing to let him go along with him on the boat, but he turns down the offer because flowers for his dead wife every day. He's got obligations. Can't just leave. So they motor off, leaving him behind.
Is that him? He does stagger to the shore, because like, I thought it was just like one of those, like they're doing a zombie, like, you know, a lone forlorn zombie, because they kind of do that sometimes. But that was Virgil, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's gotcha. Him. Okay.
So on their journey, Michonne sits below decks, sort of thinking about Rick, crying, and she gets on the walkie and raises her kids, Shoto, which I guess is Judas' code name, the little sword, and Little Brave Man, which we've heard, you know, Judith refer to Rick as the Brave Man a few episodes ago. This is all nice. I like it.
I did too.
And Michonne asks how things are going with Whispers, and Judah says, hey, we got Alpha. Not a problem anymore. We fixed it. So don't bother bringing back any bombs. Michonne tells her.
Existent arsenal.
Michonne drops a bomb of her own and says, I found Rick's stuff. And Judith asks if he's alive, but she doesn't really know. And Judith tells her, look, you got to go find him. You got to do it. You got to do it. And so she says, I'll head north. I'll try and find him, and I'll call every morning for as long as I can.
Oh, my God.
Which is
going to
be zero episodes. That's right.
Yep, it's going to, this is Morgan. Oh, call you at daybreak every single day. Morgan, you never understand. You'll never get, like, yeah, this is going to be the Morgan gimmick all over again.
Yeah, we're just never going to get a call from Michonne.
I also think it's funny, like, she establishes, like, no, you got to use the code system. I'm not Mom, I'm Daito or whatever. And then, like, you know, 30 seconds later, she's like, Mom, oh, baby, oh, I love my little... Yeah, it's like, yeah, where's the code discipline, Michonne? Yeah. Come on.
It all breaks down. Her. Blech.
And the other thing is, like, I feel like they've done a lot to make Judith very, very, very mature, and I almost believe that she would insist that, like, hey, we don't need you, Mom, just go and save Dad, blah, blah, blah. But, like, RJ's still a tender age, man. He's, like, 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I don't know, but the show, like if either Judith or RJ says, please, Mom, we're scared, the Whisperers just got over with. We're still having nightmares about him. This Whisperer man, this giant Whisperer man, just came and killed like 50 of us the other night. Mm-hmm. Came out of a grave, burst out like a nightmare thing. We want our Mom to be home for like a couple of days or two, just to say, just to hug us goodbye or something. Then like, no one believes that Michonne goes off on this wild goose hunt, but they have to have the children crazy on the side of like go off and find. And this also makes sense, all the track that they've left between like Judith like really leaning on Uncle Daryl and them having some moments these last few, because like that's another thing that they had to do to establish. But like even then, it's like we talked about the idea of like, what are they doing? What are the, is Rick being held in like fucking chains? Is Rick like Mr. Incredible from The Incredibles? He's like spread eagle in this electroshock mount bed thing that like if he even thinks of Judith or Michonne, it like electrocutes him. He's in like a helmet. What are they doing to keep this man from coming back to his family?
Yeah.
Like if we don't open on the Rick Grimes movie on his 100th escape attempt to get back to his, like, and it's the same problem, except for like, what is, you know, Michonne doesn't need a team, doesn't need to come back and get Daryl, the arch tracker. Maybe let Daryl and Carol, you know, do like, there's nothing they can do to make this make sense, because Michonne wouldn't do this. And quote unquote real life, she wouldn't do this, but she has to do it because Danai is taking off. So,
I mean, they're doing their best. Judith is straight up lying to her about a lot of things. Lying by omission at the least. I mean, she doesn't mention anything about, oh yeah, Hilltop, that's gone. That's not a thing anymore. Everyone who was at Hilltop is either A, dead. Oh, by the way, I had to murder one myself at point blank range. Or B, headed to Alexandria. Now we don't have enough food for everybody because the Hilltop stuff is gone.
We crossed off Magnus half of your still constitution, supplies. Because Kingdom and Hilltop are gone. This is now the Oceanside Alexandria compact. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's sugarcoating the situation back at the colonies for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Many, many more people have died. It's, yeah. And that's what it felt like, you know, it did. It felt very artificial and constructed. Like, there's this nothing, like, this didn't feel like characters coming and organically arriving at a course of action. It just felt like, oh, well, this is, and we got to grease that path with as much character grease as we can. And, you know, they had to do what they had to do. And it's, yeah, it's a damn shame. And I felt like, I don't know, that's why it feels real kind of rushed. Like, I feel like if they thought a little bit more at the beginning of the season, they could have had this a little bit more natural, because it was, I don't know, it felt very unsatisfying to have Michonne go out on a wild goose chase and then embark on yet another wild goose chase with scant evidence.
And then we'll also not see the resolution of, at least in this show.
Yeah, and like, it's like, I don't, what are the odds that they just don't do the movies too? it's a shame. I wish it was a little bit more definitive, like if she came back, and like that would have been an interesting way to, like, you know, I don't know, maybe The Walking Dead wasn't ready for it, but like, I do believe that Michonne, Judith, RJ, Daryl, and maybe one or two no-name people from the group would have accompanied her on this patrol boat to go to try to find Rick. Mm-hmm. And then you could have that lead off to the Carol, and that could have spun off the movies. That could have spun off the Carol and Daryl show. It could have done a lot of things and still left, you know, like, I'm still interested in seeing what, you know, Aaron and Eugene and Rosita and King Ezekiel, like, there's still enough there to, like, to wind the thing down in a season, but. Yeah,
with
I guess
Maggie
I also just
back and all that.
I never thought that Michonne was done after this season. I thought Michonne was going to be in season 11. I guess I didn't keep up on the casting news and all that kind of stuff, but I was kind of stunned when I saw this was her final episode. And what are you going to do?
Well, we could talk about the final scene here for Michonne, where she creates a couple new pets and she goes off to look for Rick. But that whole pet thing is short-lived, because she finds a couple of people who are stragglers of a much larger group, and they're being left behind because they're too slow. Michonne decides, I'll help you catch up, and ditches her pets, and presumably joins up with this much, much larger group. There are hundreds of people with it's an extremely large caravan. I don't know how they cleared a path wide enough for all these people in these woods. And it's clear they're headed for like the dead end of that path where the forest just meets back up with them. What are they going to do with this? I don't know. They've got like a Xerxes-esque like thrones of supplies that they're carrying. How do you drag
those
through
like
the
there's
woods?
Like in the middle, there's like those Constanoga wagons, and then there's some kind of like phalanx around it, and then like a loose like skirmishing, like
it
felt like a
look organized, but
it felt looked very organized. I'm very interested to see what Michonne radios back to Judith about this new group she's found. Like, that should be something that we get next episode, right?
I don't know, maybe they're gonna have her do voice work for the next two episodes or something.
I could see that, but she better be talking about this thing and how it connects to like Eugene's bullshit and all that stuff. Like, it's now suddenly it's like feeling like three episodes is too much time for the show to have, plus the six bonus episodes. Because like, if the whisper, I mean, maybe they have to clean up Beta. Like, he's got like a determined band of Whisperer resistance that he's trying to lead or whatnot. But like, I don't know. I felt like there was one blow the lid off even bigger moment left in the season. And now it feels like everything's kind of like wound up, and we got three episodes of just like, I don't know what we're going to get.
I mean, you got to reintegrate Negan, right? And then he needs to get his due for taking out Alpha.
He needs to get his medal in the throne room.
Essentially. Yeah.
Princess Carol Organa's got to like put the.
They need
the
to explain that, right? Like, what?
Yeah.
Exactly, was the plan here? Because we all left last episode pretty surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I. But yeah, almost all the whispers that we care about, other than Beta, are gone.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what they're going to do for three more episodes. It's weird. Like I said, it just really did a lot to fuck up the pacing. In fact, I guess this was intended. See, this is why I wonder, like, this last scene, if this wasn't, like, improvised or they changed. Because, like, I also noticed in the research I did that this was intended to be the 12th episode. So, like, and I don't know whether they got to that and they're like, oh, there's no fucking way Michonne would leave if this was, like, the eve of this largest battle and, like, that menace was still. So, like, we have to get like this and make it super definitive and that way, but like
maybe this should have been the 14th episode. Maybe you wait one more to where we as an audience feel the whispers.
We need one more
up.
Episode, like a mop up where it's like, okay, they've broken the back, but there is one still, like, you know, Beta's a big threat and he still has like a herd of 500 walkers and he's going to go try to take Oceanside. It has limited defenses.
Yeah.
You know, like he's going to go bypass Alexander and just, he's just trying to do as much pain as possible. And then you definitively mop that up. And then, you know, you could have even teased it a little bit. Like you could have had the Michonne, you could have a radio saying, this is Daito coming for Shoto, like Daito at the end of that episode, then tell this episode that brings us up. And then you got one more episode that you have to essentially, you know, get the, you know, kind of go around all the communities, see what's going on, establish the next threat. Doesn't that feel better? Like, so why didn't they do it? It must have been some kind of last minute thing
we'll find out next episode why they didn't do that. Who knows?
Could be. Maybe suddenly a lot riding on these last three episodes to kind of like get us to a good space.
Yeah, but that's the end of this one.
Yeah, so that's it. That's the last episode. The Michonne will be in The Walking Dead, barring flashbacks and barring, of course, the Rick trilogy that we're anticipating coming out to theaters near us sometime in 2022, maybe. Probably, because I also saw that they're retooling the Daryl Carroll thing for like 2023.
Huh. Okay.
So, because there's still a lot. There's 24 episodes of The Walking Dead, a half a year content that they can spool out in two big seasons or three regular sized eight sub seasons. There's like, so that could, you know, take us to perhaps the movie trilogy or at least the first installment that then could you know, like I kind of see like, and I'm getting there's a lot of people saying that like we need to at least like read a couple Wikipedia articles from Fear the Walking Dead, because they're starting to like all of these series and like even the, what is the World of the Walking Dead?
World Beyond. Yeah.
World Beyond Walking Dead. Like some of these things are starting to converge because AMC is like really trying to like, you know, gather up all the embers of this once mighty empire and pile them together and blow on them to get them. Blow another flame. You know, because they saw Walking Dead, you know, or no, they saw Game of Thrones give up their corners and are trying to take them back. So we'll see if it works. We'll have a stereo.com/baldmove based feedback episode out later this week. Of course, if you got long form feedback about the loss of Michonne, the direction of the show, we're almost caught up to good. Please send that in to watchingdead@baldmove.com. We'll be reading those at the end of this season before we get to the six bonus episodes. So lots more Walking Dead to come. Please send us in that feedback, watchingdead@baldmove.com, and enjoy the feedback episode out later this week. Until next week, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you later.